to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, the second half of your financial power block here every Monday starting at 4.05 p.m. Unless they decide to go at 3.30 p.m. because they just have so much to say. Right after the Talking Market Show with Mark and Andrew, we follow up with Henry Rain Show, your weekly roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more. Well, what happened this week? The cryptocurrency markets fell sharply yesterday. President Donald Trump on Thursday said he's not a fan of cryptocurrencies and suggested that Facebook may need a banking charter. Congress also took aim at Facebook's Libra cryptocurrency. Plus, this is your warning, and we have a special show on this. The IRS is gearing up to find you crypto tax evaders and helping us out here to sort through all this is, of course,
an IRS guy?
No, he is called Andrew between 4 and 5, but he's called Andy here. And, of course, that would be you, Andy. You just came off a marathon talking market.
I'm exhausted. No air conditioning today, and then an hour and a half show on alts. It was an exhausting show, but we got some good insight there.
Speaking of good insight, we have a guest we're going to bring on right at the top here, get his input on a couple of stories and then the main feature here. And that is Josh Sands. He is, you could refer to him as Crypto Tax Man. He's Crypto Tax Specialist. You can go to the website to find out more, CryptoTaxMan.us. He's on Facebook at Crypto Tax Man. If you go to Twitter or Instagram, you got to be a little bit careful because you got to put an underscore between crypto and in tax and an underscore between tax and man, but he's there. And before I even say hi to him, I got to tell you, Andy, I was looking at his Instagram account. Now, this is a guy that does taxes, helps people with taxes. He has so many followers on there. He's like the Kim Kardashian of tax guys.
Oh,
yeah, not to be sexist, tax guys and gals. It was a big number. It was like a really big number. Let's say hi to him. Josh, you there with us?
I'm here. How you doing, Henry?
Okay, good. I hope you don't mind. I was only comparing you by your social media influence on your Instagram account. I wasn't comparing you with Kim Kardashian in any other aspect.
So, I mean, I wish I had that many followers.
Well, you're just getting started.
I have a decent amount, but not quite that much.
Oh, wait till after this show is done. Anyway, there was a lot of news this week. There was news right before we came on the air, and let's go right into a couple stories, then we'll get to the tax stuff. Well, cryptocurrency markets fell sharply yesterday after Bitcoin had more than a $1,400 sell-off. Actually, hit below 10,000. I don't know what I know Andy will know, but I know we got into the upper 9,900s there.
98.57. And I know this because we had a fat order. Our biggest order was sitting at 98.50.
You're talking about your Seeking Crypto's recommended trade?
Absolutely. We had a nice fat order sitting there at 98.50. It got down to within 7. It's like 4X sometimes. You know, they pipsqueak you out. They get right there and then don't tap you in.
They had a big highlighter around yours and Mark's order there. Don't do this one.
Yeah.
The total market capitalization of all cryptocurrencies combined endured a $20 billion loss over 24 hours, making one of the largest single-day losses in market value since June 27th of 2019. Do you hear that? One of the biggest losses in going on 3 weeks.
In 3 weeks, yeah.
And up there, I didn't read the whole thing. When it was talking
I thought
about
you were going to say, like, you know, June of 2015 or something.
Right. When it dropped to $1,400, dropping below 10,500 for the first time since July 2nd, And I don't want to leave Josh out there hanging, but I do have to say, remember all those months that we were talking about? Well, it hasn't changed in 2 months, 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's like, whatever happened to Bitcoin volatility? Well, it's be careful right. what you wish
well,
for.
Here it is.
Josh, you know, some of the people, anytime the mainstream media sees a big move in Bitcoin, they discount, I mean, I'm talking CNBC and the business news, they sort of discount just the technical issues that Andy can talk about in a second, but they try and find a reason. And because every story needs an underlying reason. So this, they were pushing it on, and we'll talk about the details in a second. President Trump's tweets about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and Facebook's Libras, which was like late Thursday night. But I didn't see the direct correlation in the behavior of the price then. Do you think that had any, I'm talking to Josh now, any movement, any underlying force on the way the market moved over the weekend with the relatively large drop?
No, I'm with you. I don't think it affected the price that much. And I mean, to be honest, Trump, it's, you know, Trump.
Yeah. Right.
Anytime Trump speaks, it reminds me of the scene from Old School where Will Ferrell blacks out before he does the debate.
Now we did see something this afternoon when Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin decided to hold a press conference about cryptocurrencies. We'll get to that in a minute. Let me go back to Andy for a second. You have the price. You had that order in at the
98.50.
You hit 98.50, though.
98.57 is what it actually was the low.
Okay, so yeah. You were there at 98.50 trying to squeeze those extra $7 out of it.
And I told people, too. I said, you know, don't all put in at 98.50. Stag 98.60, 98, you know, because it's an even number, and it's a technical level everyone's looking at. And I'm more in the ball camp that news does not drive price. Sentiment is what drives price in the end. And news can be a catalyst to take it over the, you know, to push the...
To change sentiment.
Change sentiment or to push it where it was already going. So, I mean, we saw this, you know, with a lot of the large... Remember last year when a lot of large endowment funds were investing in Bitcoin, and Bitcoin didn't go anywhere. You know, so I'm in the camp that if people, it's pushing it where it was going to go anyways. It just maybe.
So why were you foreseeing it and placing that order at 98.50? What did you see?
The Bitcoin's strong. I mean, there's a lot of. I think a lot of people are discounting the strength of this market right now, and we don't know what the factors are, the fundamentals that are driving the market higher is, but we can see the order flow through the charts, and every leg up is consolidated and broken out. And if you're familiar with Darvis, the Darvis box and that.
Sure.
Yeah. You have an impulse move or motive wave, and then it consolidates, and then it has another one, and then it consolidates. And that's what we're seeing here. And we're still way under the all-time low. I mean, the all-time high. I'm sorry, the all-time high. And generally, these markets take out the all-time highs.
To move us along a little bit, even when you saw it coming down below 10,000, you didn't see anything there that caused you to change your opinion of it being in a long-term bullish trend.
No, we had orders staggered the whole way down. So we had, and our last order was at 98.50.
Okay. And Josh Sands, crypto tax specialist. It's not your job to tell people where the price is going,
nope.
But you're more to tell them what to do after they've made or lost their money in the market. But what are your thoughts on whether we're in a long-term bullish trend or not?
I'm not a day trader, but I feel that these small pullbacks aren't anything to worry about, and that we'll continue to see bullish trends.
Okay. And I want to make sure we give enough time for what you're really here for, so let me just run through a couple other things that happened. Really, I don't know. Did you happen to see Steven Mnuchin's press conference, Josh?
You know, I was out of the office most of the day, but I just caught about 20 minutes of it right before we got on the show here.
The market started to sell off. Now, this was correlated with price because they announced it, and Marcus started to sell off like, oh, my gosh, what's he going to do now? Is he going to kick it while it's down, like after President Trump tweeted about it? And it turns out that he basically said it's steady as it goes. We've got concerns. We don't like terrorists. We don't like money launderers. We don't like gangsters. But if you're dealing with an established company that's legitimate, following anti-money laundering, know your customer rules, I'm paraphrasing, but you're okay. And, boy, the price jumped a few hundred dollars. I think it's probably around 10.7 now. It's a little bit off. It's
50.
Oh, well, I was watching during a Talking Market show right at the end. I checked it was 10.7. So I guess since we came on, we've elevated
the bar again.
Anyway, the tweets that President Trump had said, I'll just read them because we've already sort of talked about it. I'm not a fan of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, which are not money and whose value is highly volatile and based on thin air. Unregulated crypto assets can facilitate unlawful behavior, including drug trade and other illegal activity. Now, that was one of three. Of course, Bitcoin is based on software, not thin air.
Yeah.
It is highly volatile, and it can facilitate unlawful behavior, including drug trade and illegal activities, much like U.S. dollars.
Well, you know, back in the day, they used to trade Tide. Tide was the big money laundering thing, believe it or not.
Tide?
Tide laundry detergent. They would trade drugs for containers full of Tide.
When was this?
It wasn't that long ago. Google it. That was one of the big... Yes. The whole thing is if you can get money for it some other way, it's just like the mafia days. You buy this, you get this, and you trade it for that, and there's just a lot of funny money going on there.
Are you talking like the '30s or the '20s or?
No, I will Google it while you go on so that we can get it.
Okay, all right. So, tweet two. Similarly, Facebook Libra's virtual currency will have little standing or dependability. If Facebook and other companies want to become a bank, they must seek a new banking charter and become subject to all banking regulations, just like other banks. Both national, and then you got to wait until the third tweet comes out, and international. We have only one real currency in the USA. It's stronger than ever, more dependable and reliable, by far the most dominant currency anywhere in the world, and will always stay that way. It's called the United States dollar. I think we can pretty much let that one stand.
And here we go. Why would drug dealers use Tide for currency? And if you go into this, that's why Tide's more expensive.
But what period of time?
This
and where?
That long ago. This is the New York Times in 2013.
All right.
Look what they used to put. They used to put the locks on there.
Okay. All right. But I don't think that's where the term money laundering came from.
No, but it was, the point is you can use anything to trade for drugs. $100 bills are not traceable.
Okay.
For the most part.
I'm afraid to go down that rabbit hole way, even an inch. But continuing on the fallout from President Trump's tweets, it's not directly from the tweets, but it's in the environment of the Facebook Libra announcement. Congress gears up to question Facebook about its cryptocurrency project. That would be the Senate tomorrow and the House the following day. There is a draft legislation by House Democratic lawmakers that aims to keep big tech companies out of financial service industries. The discussion draft is a starting point for potential legislation, and lawmakers will likely make changes as they continue to examine the issue. I have more to say about that in just a second. As the draft stands now, it would prohibit Facebook and other tech companies with at least $25 billion in revenue from becoming a financial institution or issuing a cryptocurrency. According to the draft bill titled Keep Big Tech Out of Finance Act, and let's see, KBT, so it doesn't spell out some cool word, so they'll have to fix that. Companies in violation would face $1 million daily fine, which if they're really successful, $365 million a year is just cost of doing business. The House Financial Services Committee Democratic majority put together the bill with the intention of maintaining, quote, a firewall between commerce and banking. And now, I've actually read the draft, which is only 7 pages long, so it's not even like a real law in any way.
Because, like Tron's white paper.
Yeah, probably Tron gave you more substance. And no Democratic lawmaker put their name on the draft, so this is totally a – I'm pretty sure they turned to the staff chairman, not the chairman of the committee, but the person that runs the staff, and said, make something up before Wednesday when the guy from Facebook's here.
Yeah.
So it's there. It doesn't even – it doesn't even have an understanding of the issue, which so I'm almost disappointed that the staff did it, because usually the staff has better knowledge than the legislators herself about technical things. First of all, it's not Facebook that's issuing the cryptocurrency. It's going to be the Libra Foundation, Calibra, whatever they call it, and that's not going to have $25 billion in revenue to start. It's going to be chartered in Switzerland. So actually, this law would, as it's not even a draft, is being too giving it too much credit, is not really relevant to the situation. But what is relevant is that the ranking committee member on the House Committee Financial Services Committee, who's a Republican, that's why he's called the ranking member, and the chairman are on the same page on this. So Facebook has to really be concerned that. You know, they got some heavy lifting to do to get past the Senate and the House. And to start it off, David Marcus, who is at the helm of Calibra, who will be the person to be giving testimony for Facebook and Libra tomorrow and the next day, put out his testimony, that monologue they do when they first come on, so that everybody could read it in advance. We know we need to take time to get this right, and I want to be clear. Facebook will not offer the Libra digital currency until we have fully addressed regulatory concerns and received appropriate approvals. And he also likes mom and apple pie. And then he also mentions Jerome Powell in his testimony, saying Facebook, quote, strongly agrees with the Fed chair's belief that Libra needs to be patient and thorough rather than a sprint to implementation. So another sort of boilerplate kind of thought.
I mean, how can Facebook issuing digital currencies go bad? I don't see any way it can go bad.
Josh Sands, CryptoTaxMan, CryptoTaxMan.us is where you can get more information about Josh and his services. For your, not to give comment on all that monologue I just gave about this stuff, but for people in your profession that may be dealing with this concept in another year or two, what are your thoughts relative to that?
So from an accounting standpoint, it could be a little bit of a accounting nightmare, depending on what happens with some of the legislation that we're waiting for. Because even if you're using a stable coin, you're still going to have to account for every transaction that's done. The maybe one good thing that I could see coming out of this is that the power that Facebook has with the money they spend on lobbying and pushing some of this regulation through to maybe push that de minimis exemption through, so most people don't have to worry about accounting.
Okay, take a second and explain that to the audience.
Can I ask you a question?
De minimis?
So if I own Facebook coin, but it's not an investment, so, how's that taxable if I'm using it to buy a car on Craigslist or whatever the Facebook marketplace is?
So just think about, like, on Coinbase. If you're using USDC, USDT, you still have to run those through your accounting software to calculate your gains and losses, because it's not typically always just pegged to one U.S. dollar. So all those still have to be accounted for. Now, the de minimis exemption applies to what's called non-functional currencies, which is anything but the U.S. dollar. So if it causes a gain of the exemption's $200, anything below $200, it's not reportable. It's exempt from being reported.
Okay.
So if
I were going to England and I got some British pounds and it cost me $200 when I left, but when I turned them in when I came back, they gave me $220 back, I don't have to worry about reporting the $20 gain.
Yes, and most people wouldn't do that anyways. But but with with crypto right now, the proposals is actually a $600 de minimis exemption. So I'm hoping that the only good that comes out of Facebook being in this space is that they could put their power to pushing some of this legislation through. But it could turn out to be a possible accounting nightmare.
Okay. Well, let me give you one more thing to have a nightmare about. Probably won't lose nightmare. Sleep over this, but then we want to go into how you help your clients with their crypto tax calculations and for their tax return. So now what has been established both through what Mr. Marcus's testimony tomorrow and through the white paper of Facebook Libra is that the Libra is actually going to be backed by U.S. dollars, British pounds, the euro, and Japanese yen, plus a basket, beside the basket of the currencies themselves that are going to be held as reserve, there's also going to be short-term debt instruments in these currencies held in reserve. So if the Libra is backed by a combination of four sovereign currencies and the debt instruments from those currencies, which I believe have to be considered whether they're a T-bill or whatever they are, is a security. So it would be a basket of securities. So how can you treat it as a cryptocurrency or as a currency if it's really backed by a basket of securities?
I mean, I kind of agree with you on that point. So again, I think that's where I think some of this legislation needs to be pushed through. To where the IRS, SEC has to recognize this, because it's not only going to be a nightmare for individuals, but it's going to be a nightmare for them, and that's what the IRS is going through right now.
Okay. So getting into what you actually do for your clients, and by the way, we're just going to give you a taste over the next, because I believe you have to leave at 5:45. So over the next 10 or 15 minutes, we'll start to lay this out for people, but Josh has... let me know that over the course of the second half of the year that he'll come back and expand on this so that people that listen regularly can be better prepared for the tax return at the end of the year they're going to have to do. So before we talk about...
I got a question for him, if you don't mind. So if I buy... I have some Bitcoin, and I want to buy something on Shopify. Or what, no, what is it?
Place that takes Bitcoin.
One that takes Bitcoin. And I use that for buying a bicycle. I'm required to pay taxes.
I'm picturing you on a bicycle.
On that, yeah, right? Yeah, a big bike. I'm required to pay taxes on that if it's over, any amount of money right now, correct?
Yes.
Now,
so the amount that you pay, that depends. That depends on the cost basis when you originally purchased that Bitcoin. And that also depends on the accounting method that you're using.
Okay, now do they – my big question is, do they use first in, first out?
So as of now, we are looking at crypto as the IRS and mostly the SEC are stating it's almost like a security. So in that landscape, let's just say, for example, you open up a TD Ameritrade account. If you do not choose your accounting method, you're going to be defaulted as using FIFO. But you do have the option to choose your accounting method. You could choose highest price first out, last in first out, or FIFO. And there's also specific ID, which is specifically choosing your tax lot. So you're not subject to using just FIFO. I guess long answer.
Can you change from year to year, or once you've established something, are you stuck with it the rest of your life?
Yes, you can change year to year. I've had people come to me and say that once you choose your accounting method, you have to stick with it. I think what people get confused is actually business inventory accounting, so that does apply to that type of accounting. But when it comes to investments, you can change. You can go on your investment account now and change your...
I'm changing mine.
Yes, you can change the method that you use.
Well, I've got to now go with one question of mine. Not to get the audience into the weeds too much, because I wanted to get to the more basic stuff first. But now that we're here, I got to ask a question of personal interest. So I use Coinbase, I use Coinbase Pro, and I use Kraken. And so what I do, because I can get my dollars into my Coinbase account from my bank account, then I'll move it to Coinbase Pro and buy. Let me keep it this simple. Okay. So say I bought a Bitcoin on Coinbase Pro, and then 6 months ago when it was $4,000, and I put it back in my Coinbase account because it's secure there. Then I put money into Coinbase Pro a few months later, buy another Bitcoin, but this time I send it to my Kraken account to sit there.
Mm-hmm.
If I sell the Bitcoin that I put in Kraken at the later date, I'm doing first in, first out, do I have to use the price from the first Bitcoin that is actually sitting in the Coinbase account?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So basically what we do when we're calculating capital gains, and depending on the accounting method, we're pooling all trades kind of into one bucket, whether you're trading on 10 exchanges or two.
Okay. All right. Let's put that on hold, because that was really more of a personal interest, and I need to become a client or something to really take up the time on that, because I want to get into what we were originally talking here. So, tell us about what you're able to do for people in general, not for me on where my Bitcoin is going to be first in or first out, but what your general kind of crypto client for your tax services does. What is that general kind of client look like, and what kind of services do you provide?
So, I mean, absolutely anybody can do their taxes on their own, depending on how complex their situation is. Now, the typical person that will come to me is somebody that attempts to do it on their own to start, and then they have problems along the way. And that could be due to, numerous issues. They don't know how to gather all their data from the exchanges, or they're having issues with the software that they're using, or they just don't understand, what their tax liability looks like or what they're going to owe. So that's kind of the typical person that I'll work with. And the process that I follow is I always like to be part of the process when gathering their data. So I usually do a screen share, and I'll either direct them on where to get their data, or they'll even just say, take over my screen and pull all my trades, which some people right now may be saying that sounds like a pretty high security risk. but I tell them from the start, it's like, you got to trust me if you want my help. So.
Yeah.
Well, they could always be right next to you in the office, right?
Yeah, I mean, they see exactly what I'm doing. So, that's typically what I'll try to walk them through as much as possible, and also so that they understand the full process too.
Okay. So I reached out to you when I saw this Twitter thread, of all things, from Crypto Tax Girl. And let me remind people, since it's an opportune time, that if you want to follow Josh on Twitter, he is crypto_tax_man. No relation to Crypto Tax Girl.
I think I follow him.
Yeah. I said that, but I don't really know. You aren't related to Crypto Tax Girl, are you?
No, actually, it wasn't until about a month after I took that name that I chose that name is that I found out about the Crypto Tax Girl. She's got a lot more.
So it's not like Batman and Batgirl.
No.
You guys do your own thing.
Tax.
All right, but you did put out a thread that I found really interesting, and that's when I reached out to you, is about how the IRS is now training training agents to find crypto tax evaders and create enforcement for crypto tax gains. So what did you see in this? What are you aware of? What is the IRS doing now that they weren't doing the previous couple of years?
Well, and that's kind of what I was going to bring up to start off with was, what their first attempt was, which was the subpoena. Some of these exchanges like Coinbase and then Gemini, they were issuing 1099-Ks, but that doesn't quite cover everybody because the requirements for 1099-Ks is if you've had $20,000 in gross proceeds in more than 200 transactions, which not everybody does.
It has to meet both those requirements?
Yes. And 1099-Ks are actually just for, like, let's just say, you have an online store and you use, you know, PayPal to accept credit card. You usually receive a 1099-K for that. And with any traditional brokerage account, you're going to get a different type of 1099-K, which actually calculates your gains for you. But these exchanges, they don't really have a way to do that because, you know, people move their funds from one exchange to another, and their cost basis is all over the place.
So, and you bring up a good point. What does a guy do when they're in a situation like that? I mean, when you just have so much shit.
It's a process.
Yeah, I mean, you just have so much stuff, and you're, I mean, can you do like a bulk? Hey, listen, I start with 20,000, I had 28 at the end of the year, that's it, and then move to the next year if you do enough transactions?
Well, in those gross proceeds, it's not, everybody that's come to me with a 1099-K, it does not match up with what their actual trades represent, because Coinbase Pro, they're looking at not only just trades, but they're looking at withdrawal deposits. So their numbers are like, they're way overstated, and people typically freak out when they get them. So when they do get them, it's worth it for them to reach out to like professionals to help them, you know, through this. But yeah, it's been a mess with anybody that's received a 1099-K, but usually by the end of the process, they're feeling pretty comfortable and not as stressed.
Right. So we get how they come to you, what they may have in hand, the data that you're going to collect. But what is the IRS doing? You were talking about the subpoenas on the 1099s, and that may not have been that effective for them. I think that's what the last thing you were saying about that, and they were starting to do other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's my guess that it wasn't effective the first round. I mean, they're still probably going to be issuing 1099-Ks that are required to. But them starting to go after people looking through their social media, you know, subpoena, like, you know, Facebook, Twitter, other social media platforms. I've always told people that I've gotten into conversations with, usually on social media, like, if you're openly saying you're not paying your taxes, you're going to be one of the first people that the IRS goes after.
Now do they do that by, you know, you're saying about that on the social media. I mean, I'm sure you're talking about if you were verbalizing it in a crowded party, too, but if you're saying it on social media, that's an even dumber thing to do, but do they, like, search, just do, like, a Google search of social media, or do they go to the social media companies and try and get information?
I think that it's going to be both. So based on the that PowerPoint that they put out, it looks like they're going to be doing both. So, I mean, it's easy for anybody. You can go on Twitter and, you know, search through different conversations. You'll find people talking about it. To kind of get deeper into it, if they're issuing subpoenas to some of these companies, they're going to have, you know, historical, you know, conversations or records, especially if they're, you know, subpoenaing like financial institutions for, you know, ACHs or wire transfers. And that's kind of the reality now, is that they're finding another, I guess, backdoor way of, you know, people that are openly avoiding, you know, paying tax on their gains.
Do you have any indication that they may have filtering software? Because if I were to do a search, you know, I'm going to lose interest after about the second, third page of my search results. Whereas if they're trying to find people on this and doing some broad search on Twitter or Google, they're going to have thousands and thousands of results to have to try and sort through. Have you had any indication that they're using a filtering software?
I know the IRS had partnered with Chainalysis. I don't know if it was last year, but they're a software company that will help them filter out some of that, or kind of scrub through the data much easier than obviously doing it one page at a time. And that's, I guess, where you kind of got to be concerned, is they'll be able to track, you know, where Bitcoin has moved from certain wallet addresses. So I don't know exactly how that works, because I'm not like a big tech guy. I know the accounting.
Right.
But they do have partnerships with the companies that are helping them.
Okay. It's 5:42. Are you still on the 5:45 deadline to get off the air?
Yeah, we've.
Okay, so let me get to two things really quick here. It says that IRS is planning on asking Apple, Google, and Microsoft about taxpayers' download history to see if they've downloaded cryptocurrency applications.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sounds like they're going to get everybody. At least they're going to be aware of everybody.
I feel like it's going to be a slow process, but they will have access to anybody that's downloaded any type of, you know, crypto-related app or anything crypto-related, period. So I don't know how they're going to be choosing people.
Because I want to have time to wrap with you. Let me just go a couple other things that are on this Twitter thread. It says they're going to use subpoenas to collect bank, credit card, and PayPal records to see if any of the payments went to parties that can send or receive cryptos, like Overstock.com or something like that. They plan to review Facebook, Twitter, to find publicly available Bitcoin and Ether addresses. But one of the things that must be really disturbing to people, it says that the agent should be sure not to notify the taxpayer about the obtainment of information regarding their use of Bitcoin.
Which that's a little scary because, I mean, they're gonna have all of your, you know, history before you even know it. They'll be knocking on your door, and they'll know what they're looking for.
You know, it's a good time to contact Hillary and see what she did to wash her, you know, to scrub her identity there.
I don't know. People were talking about her, so she went and didn't do it good enough. You need to ask the person that we don't know about.
That's right. That's exactly.
Find that person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, so we've had this time with Josh Stans, crypto tax man, a crypto tax specialist. So let me give you the contact info, and we're going to have him back, and we're going to dive deeper into this stuff as the year progresses and it comes down to crunch time. And so the website is cryptotaxman.us, and just that easy to remember. All you got to do is type it out there, nothing special. You Facebook, you just put that into Facebook, too. You're going to find his Facebook page, and there's some good information there. It looks like every week he's putting up an informative article. And then his Instagram and Twitter is crypto_tax_man. If you just do the crypto tax man, you're going to get some goober on Twitter that hadn't posted anything for a couple years and has like 12 followers. You want the real crypto tax man, crypto_tax_man. That's Josh Stans. He's at offices in Sarasota. We're going to be talking to him more often. Anything you want to leave the audience with, Josh?
Just keep your records in order. It's necessary to make your life a lot easier.
Right. I'm totally screwed.
You can count on Andy being back for the shows where you're coming back.
Yes,
definitely. So, Josh, thank you for joining us. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Henry.
Thank you. Bye. All right, let's go to a quick break. We talked about how the IRS is using Google. We're going to get into something a little bit out of our normal sphere,
but almost freaky.
How Google and IBM and Xilinx are all helping
colluding with China
with their surveillance state. So are we really that secure over here from that? You're listening to the Henry Rain Show. Henry Rain Show here on WWPR, 1490 AM. Andrew Gonsi, you can use either one. He'll answer to Andy or Andrew, but you need to know that he is one half of the SeekingCryptos.com founders, and he is one half of Talking Markets, which comes on at 4:05 every Monday here. And
it's all about cryptos today, too.
Yes, 90 minutes marathon on cryptos with our friend John Sacco. And we have to thank Josh Sand, that was just on the show. He was actually at our last Bitcoin meetup.
I was wondering if that was him.
Yeah, okay. He had been on the show a year ago, but he was at the Bitcoin meetup. We have another Bitcoin meetup coming up August 1st. That's at the Manatee Sarasota County Library. It's for the Sarasota Bitcoin meetup. It's for the Bradenton Bitcoin cryptocurrency meetup. So go there, and it's a nice facility, and we're expecting more people. I see more people signing up, so we should have a good turnout there. And Leonard Lupin from Bike Federal.
Oh, is he coming in?
He said he's going to try and be there, so we'll see. So we're going to have to hit the express button here to get this story laid out. Peter Thiel is a billionaire investor. He's a Facebook board member. He's one of the founders of PayPal. And he made news yesterday night, when he said Google should be federally investigated for allegedly aiding the Chinese military. He was at the National Conservatism Conference, and he made 3 points. Number one, how many foreign intelligence agencies infiltrated the Manhattan Project for Artificial Intelligence? This would be a question for Google. Number two, does Google's senior management consider itself to have been thoroughly infiltrated by Chinese intelligence? Now, the natural answer is to say no.
No.
And number three, is it because they consider themselves to be so thoroughly infiltrated that they have engaged in seemingly treasonous decision to work with the Chinese military and not with the U.S. military because they are making the sort of bad short-term rationalistic decision that if the technology doesn't go out the front door, it gets stolen out the back door anyway? Now, all these are sensationalist kind of questions. Throwing the word treason around, treason has an actual definition in the Constitution, which is pretty hard to hit. You have to be working for somebody who's actually declared war on, or either us or them. But it isn't too much to say. One other person, Joe Lonsdale, who was a fellow co-founder with Peter Thiel at the company Palantir, which does data analytics, said that he thought Thiel was courageous for speaking out about Alphabet's Google. And he goes on to say, in his opinion, obviously, everyone in the Valley knows that the Chinese government is very involved with Google. It's something we don't talk about a lot. It was very courageous of Thiel to talk about it.
That's nuts.
Well, but it is. Why should we be surprised if we're buying into, and for me myself, there's not a lot, not to take us too far down politics, but there's not a lot of things I agree with the Trump administration on. But I see the points they're making about China. I see how they approach it. And I have to give credit where credit is due that they're taking it very seriously and methodically. And you have to then follow through. If you think it's a problem when the Chinese are stealing stealing intellectual property, and you're going to prohibit them from one of their companies from buying Qualcomm, or you're going to keep Huawei out of American products, well, you have to wonder, where else are they? And I'm not saying that they're infiltrating Google, but it would be a logical process to investigate. And when we tell you some of the next stuff, you'll say, oh, man, maybe we should investigate. But think about it. Google was trying to be in the marketplace for China.
Yeah.
And they do have some products. There's a lot of these big tech companies have operations in China. So now what do you have to do if you have one of those operations? You need Chinese speakers. You need Mandarin speakers. You need people that are culturally fluent, that understand the marketplace and the country they're in.
And you have to partner with one of their...
Right. And just in your hiring, how can you know everything about... You think there isn't somebody at Ford that maybe would be giving secrets, forget about China, to Chevrolet, to GM, that they don't place people in positions or people that are already there think I can make some money on the side? So, to be, say, thoroughly infiltrated, like I said, that's over-the-top question. Would it be useful for corporate espionage to be there? Of course.
Probably.
Now, the point is that with this next story, and I'm going to have to be efficient on this, well, have they made it even easier for them not only to infiltrate, but to partner? An American organization founded by tech giants Google and IBM is working with a company that is helping China's authoritarian government conduct mass surveillance. The Open Power Foundation, a nonprofit led by Google and IBM executives with the aim of trying to, quote, drive innovation, set up a collaboration between IBM and a Chinese company called Sentient and U.S. chip manufacturer Xilinx. So other than Sentient, big companies we all know of, and maybe even have invested in. The Sentient is using the devices. It's an open source. So they've worked on an advanced breed of Microsoft microprocessors that enable computers to analyze vast amount of data more efficiently. All things tech companies do. They're using these devices to enhance the capabilities of internet surveillance and censorship technology. So Sentient has taken the things that they've gotten from this open source partnership with the American companies and employed it in their products, which is the point of the foundation. We are spreading technology. You know, forget about keeping it. We're helping. It's open source. Take it. Do great things with it. And Sentient is doing what they consider great. The company employee said its technology is being used to monitor currently 200 million people. The Intercept, which is who this story is from, actually had a person pose as a potential customer, and amazing what they got. None of the companies have responded to requests for comment. Open Power Foundation said it does not become involved or seek to be informed about the individual business strategies, goals, or activities of its member. Don't ask, don't tell. IBM said it's not worked with Sentient on any joint technology development. Well, yeah, because you're at arm's length. You have your people in the foundation. They have their people in the foundation. But IBM has deniability. But I'm sure there's probably, when you want to do business in China, benefits to having contacts. Senator Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, the vice chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, says it's disturbing. Sentient presents itself as a big data analysis. And a reporter contacted the company, the one I said posed as a customer. We have to take carry this over. Anyway, he got the sales pitch. And they are able to handle, for these 200 million people, an interconnection that is 1,000 terabits per second. In other words, 3.75 million hours of high-definition video, the equivalent of data, they can process every minute. The sources familiar with this go on. Anyway, I'm just going to get down to the cost. So Sentient markets this outside of China, too. And their pricing on this is pretty amazing. They can, let's see, for $1.5 million to $2.5 million, they can monitor the internet activity of 5 million people. If we add phone calls, instant messaging, and location information, then it's going to add another It will be $2 to $5 million to cover those 5 million people. You can do the math on how much it costs to follow 200 million. We're going to have to leave it there. We've got to get out of here for the next show. I will say to Andy, if you look at this at your home computer, there's a link. Take the link to the article at The Intercept, and then they give a video because this salesperson sent them the video of the screenshots, and you can watch how it surveils against people. How it follows people around. All right, we got to get out of here. We've got to be off the air for the next show. We'll try and pick up back on this. You're listening to The Henry Raines. We'll talk to you next Monday.